When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. I'm not going to lie, I was a little worried I was going to mess that up. It's been a while. My name is Robert Morrison, a contributor at NinerNoise.com, and here with me, as per usual, is my fellow contributor at NinerNoise.com. We also have somebody else, but we'll get to that in a moment. But first, we have Akshaz Divadula. Akshaz, man, it's been a while. How's it going?
It's good, Robert. You know, I'm super excited for today's episode. We have a real special guest who knows more about the draft than either of us might ever. So
that's right.
It'll be good to get a lot of insight in. But it's been good. I've been, you know, taking a break from football news a little bit. Nothing much happening. Hearing a lot of rumors, not believing any of them, and excited to get some real stuff to talk about soon.
Yeah, for sure. It's been, I'd say, pretty quiet. Mm-hmm. Over the last couple of weeks and just the NFL in general. But, you know, a little spattering here and there. The Detroit Lions are spending all the money. how much money did they spend in the last yesterday or this morning? I think it was this morning. They spent like 200 and something million dollars on between Amon-Ra St. Brown and Penei Sewell, which is good. And apparently Jared Goff's getting another one. So, man, that guy is either really good at stuff or just really good at making people think that he is good at stuff enough to get massive contracts, which, you know, good for him if he can get it. But I think, like, we were talking about this before we started recording. I think the big news is for the 49ers is wide receiver related. No, not that one. It's obviously the return of Trent Taylor to the 49ers. George Kittle is super pumped about that. I don't know. It's a fine signing as you mentioned before. Maybe it's a camp body, but it seems like his usefulness over the last couple of years has been in the return game, and the 49ers are certainly looking for someone who can solidify that. And frankly, he's not, like, you know, he's not an old guy. He's only been in the league for six seasons, including three of the 49ers, two in Cincinnati and last year in Chicago. You know, he'll be 30 years old here pretty soon, actually next week. So really happy birthday to Trent. But I think, you know, if he's going to be a guy that you can stick back there and punt returns and solidify the return game after what we've seen over the last couple of years, I'm all for it if that's literally all he does.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm a little skeptical that he's really going to get a lot of run in the regular season, especially because Juwan Jennings kind of is in basically every way, quite literally as well, so like a supersized version of Trent Taylor. I mean, the guy's massive compared to Trent. And I just think, you know, coming off that Super Bowl, it's going to be hard for Jennings to really be displaced as that big slot option. So, you know, return game, definitely. I think Taylor could get involved there. I mean, the return game in the NFL is going to be so different, and it might actually benefit the Niners more than most teams. The team full of, like, yards after the catch, essentially, good blocking across the field. So, you know, if he can get involved, if he can help out, that'll be great. It's a great story for him to be back. You know, young player, got around with the Niners as they were getting, you know, out of the dark ages, as we'll say. So happy that he's back, but not expecting much.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go ahead and introduce our special guest who you were alluding to yesterday, or yesterday, I don't know what I'm talking about, who you were alluding to just a few moments ago, so we can, you know, he can chime in on these very important issues. We're also going to talk about something that's going to be a little bit more of a big deal that I think you probably ought to say, and that is our resident Niner Noise draft expert, as you referred to, as you called him earlier, and then famed Niner down under, Jeremy Wolfart. Jeremy, thanks for joining us. You're with us last year around the draft, and we're glad to have you back. So thanks for being here at I think it's a weirder hour of the time of the night for Akshaz and I than it is for you, but thanks for being here. How you doing?
Good evening, fellas. Yes, it's good to be back. Draft time is my one of my favorite times of the year, of course. You flatter me with draft expert. Usually we just try to fake it till we make it when it comes to the draft. But
that's what we're all doing, eh?
No, it's a very exciting draft year. It's been one of the more unpredictable build-ups, even by draft standards, that I can certainly remember. And with the first round draft pick that the 49ers are holding since 2021, it's certainly been a lot more interesting than certainly a lot more of the drafts in recent memory for the team. Yeah, it's interesting with Trent Taylor, because one of the needs that were really ticked off, and this was even before the Brandon Ayuk stuff really got going, was in fact, what is the team going to do at kick return, at punt return, especially with these new rules, because these new rules are going to be very unpredictable, because we're not really sure what teams are going to do with them. So it's kind of interesting that they've actually sort of gone back to the well, as it was. Trent Taylor, more of a returner than a skill position player, so to speak. So it's certainly interesting to see how that develops, and I think especially in camp, how they're going to build up with those new rules and how they're going to develop the strategies in that. Because there's one thing we know, it's Kyle Shanahan. He really loves to make all these sort of almost like evil genius sort of strategies in that. So I'm interested to see how that goes with Taylor and camp as well.
Yeah. Well, you walked us nicely into the next topic of conversation. Before we get into the draft, obviously, we need to talk about the elephant in the room, which is also wide receiver related, unfortunately, and that is the whole Brandon Ayuk situation. You know, as Aksha has said, depending on who your favorite beat writer is, he's either definitely getting traded, or they're definitely keeping him, or maybe they're trading him, or who knows. I mean, I tend to think we'll have the answer to that question pretty soon. As you're listening to this, we're probably hours from the start of the draft, which begins Thursday night. I believe it is at 8 o'clock or 8:30. 8 o'clock, I believe. 8:30 is the start time. 8 o'clock is something else. But we'll, the Niners won't be picking for a good long while after that. And we'll talk about how that draft is going to shape up. But I think, frankly, if the trade doesn't happen within, the first, 10 to 20 picks of the draft, you kind of think, okay, he's sticking around for at least next year. That's kind of how I'm thinking, that it's gotta be worth their while, in the same way that it was 2 years ago with Deebo Samuel. Somebody would have to really wow them at this particular point, because the 49ers still hold all the cards at this, especially in this case where Ayuk has the fifth year option that he can play on. They could technically franchise tag him twice. I don't think they want to do that, because they tend not to want to do that. But I don't know. I tend to think the market is going to shape up that one of the ways that the only reason that the 49ers would give Ayuk away is if they got a pick good enough that was going to allow them to draft one of these stud wide receivers at the top of the draft. And if they can't get that guy, then there's no point in doing that. And on the reverse side, if somebody like the Bears, who have number 9 overall, wouldn't they just take a stud wide receiver at 9 overall if they can get him, rather than having to trade for and then ultimately pay a lot of money to Brandon Ayuk? I don't know. So I tend to think that he's probably going to stay, because the market's not going to shake out. But I don't know what you guys thought.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're not getting one of Harrison, Odunze, or Neighbors in exchange for Ayuk, the Niners can't make that deal. And that's just where they are as a team, right? At this point, they got to be thinking Super Bowl next year, and like really next year. So you're not a better team by losing Brandon Ayuk. You might be marginally worse if these like top three receivers are as good as everyone thinks they are. And, Jeremy, I don't know if you have a particular preference on which one you think best fits the Niners. From what I've read, I think Neighbors is the kind of guy who would best fit the kind of Niners path. But overall, they're not trading him for less than a first. I think that much is guaranteed. And I don't see anyone, like you said, being at the top of the draft and thinking, Yeah, let's trade for Brandon Ayuk instead of drafting one of these guys and getting him for 4 years. And say we'll pay Ayuk, I don't know, maybe $30 million, 28, 29 after Ross St. Brown's deal. Like, there's going to be a big wave of wide receiver contracts. Ayuk, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, and St. Brown. And St. Brown set the bar high and set it early. So, you know, it's going to be pretty expensive to keep him around, but I agree. I just can't see him going anywhere for next year.
Yeah, I think it's first round or bust for the 49ers. The interesting thing is you get a good idea of where the team's, I guess, priorities are with the combine interviews. And we know that they've focused really on three or four different positions. They focused on the O-line. They focused on corner. They focused on a couple edge rushers. And they focused on receiver. And they have met with some first-round receivers. There's, for example, Brian Thomas Jr., the LSU wide receiver. Not Neighbors, the other LSU wide receiver. But it's kind of interesting because they've also met with players like Xavier Worthy, who's on that first to second round bubble, especially after he broke the combine records. Ladd McConkey from Georgia, Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. So they're doing their due diligence, but I don't think it's going to happen unless someone ponies up a first rounder and teams want to pony up a second rounder. But at the end of the day, I think it's a lot of grandstanding. I think we've seen this with like Bosa and Debo, Fred Warner. You know, they end up getting their contracts in the end. And with the exception of DeForest Buckner, who got traded because the 49ers simply couldn't afford it no matter what, I just don't see it happening. I think it would have to really move them because, as you mentioned, Robert, the 49ers hold the cards. They don't need to give them a contract now. You know, they've got the fifth year. They've got the franchise options, although they'd rather not pull that lever unless they absolutely had to. So they're not forced to settle, so to speak. So, yeah, I think if we don't see it halfway through the first round or so, maybe slightly after halfway, I just don't see it happening at all.
Yeah.
It'll be Thursday night or bust.
Yeah, I think that's right. Akshaz and I have had this conversation a lot. We've seen this, we're going on 5 years of this, you know, going all the way back to George Kittle and Deebo Samuel and Fred Warner and Nick Bosa last year. And now it's Brandon Ayuk. And next year it'll probably be Brock Purdy, you know, provided all things go well next year. So, I mean, we're kind of used to the MO of how this front office works and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I certainly wish that they were a little bit more, a little pacier with their choices and didn't let these things drag out through the summer and all this kind of stuff. But we just come to expect that's how this goes. And hopefully they'll be able to get this one done sooner rather than later. Maybe a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown getting all that money that he got allows them to go, okay, well, here's a number that we're looking at. Here's where we feel comfortable, and maybe they can make things happen a little faster. I don't know. All right, so let's pivot the conversation, unless you guys have any further things to say about Ayuk.
I'll add my caveat, which is that I really think he is the jumper cable, the spark plug of the Niners offense, especially in the passing game. So I feel the only way I feel this is different than the Debo negotiation is because Debo's negotiation had no real comparison because he wasn't really a wide receiver one, but he was also a running back at the same time. And it was a whole positional value and value to the 49ers thing. The one thing I'd say about Ayuk is going to be fantastic and a bona fide top receiver in any team he goes to, which makes him a little more universal. So I could see more teams being interested. Just because you don't have to try so hard to see how do we best use his talents. You can plug him in any offense, and I think he'd absolutely dominate.
Yeah, I think that's true. He's definitely more of a conventional wide receiver than as compared to Debo. But all right, well, let's let's make the transition into the draft stuff, because that's really what we're here to talk about. I should say, I want to say this now before I forget about it. As you're listening to this on Thursday morning, you know, whatever that or whatever your time frame might be, as you're getting ready for the draft, Niner Noise is doing a live draft event. So please go over to ninernoise.com and check out. There should be some information there on where you can join us for that. We're just gonna be hanging out, talking about the draft. I think we'll be watching, you know, kind of live streaming the viewership of the first rounds. The last time we did this was the Trey Lance pick, depending on how you feel with that. And we did a live stream of that. That, of course, we didn't have to wait terribly long for because it was pick number 3. This one will be a lot more interesting because it's going to be conceivably 31 picks before the Niners do anything. Although that will be interesting and a topic of conversation that we can talk about. So, all right, so let's start with this. And Jeremy, we'll start with you. And Akshaz, if you have thoughts on this, feel free to weigh in. This is personally like my major blind spot. I'm not a big college football guy. There's just too much of it. And so it's hard for me to lock in. So, I know a little bit about some things, but not a lot about enough, I think is where I would say. So, Jeremy, this is where we lean on you in this case. So let's start in a sort of general sense about the draft and talk about, like, where are the draft's strengths and how do you think it fits with what the 49ers needs are heading into this draft?
Well, the 49ers are actually quite fortunate here because the biggest need, I think, everyone universally agrees as far as San Francisco is concerned, is that O-line. And it just so happens to neatly dovetail that O-line is the strongest position for this draft. There could be up to 10 offensive linemen taken in the first round, which is, you know, one every 3 picks. But very interestingly, there's not a lot of consensus after Joel on what the order is going to be when they're drafted. So it's very interesting in terms of who do they like, because they've met with quite a few first rounders. So they should be able to fill that need. They should even be able to find some good starters, especially on that interior for the second day as well. You're also going to find a lot of receivers, especially in that first to early second round area. So, you know, if the Brandon Ayuk saga forces its hand, or even if they just find someone they really like too much to let go, there's going to be a lot of depth there too. They're probably the two biggest ones. There is a pretty decently strong quarterback class, although other than Caleb Williams, or even with Caleb Williams, there's still a lot of question marks people have about those particular prospects. So you'll find that offensive line, wide receiver, and quarterback are probably the strongest. It's a very offense-based draft this year. If you don't have a lot of holes on defense, and the 49ers certainly don't outside of corner, this is really a good draft for you.
Well, what about cornerback then, as far as that's concerned? Is there... I know it's been, there's certainly conversation about it being a possibility at 31, and we can talk about that more in a second, but is there a place, because, I mean, you know, even if you think, well, they're probably good for this year, if you think about the, you know, their two main guys, Travarius Ward, Diamador Lenore, and then some of the, you know, Isaac Yiadom, who had a pretty good year last year in New Orleans, stands to be kind of like the next man up as a chance to take over as that third cornerback, if they're thinking about doing a similar thing they did last year, where it's like Lenore on the outside and then Lenore on the inside on nickel passing downs. But is there somebody there that could be, because both Lenore and Ward are free agents after this year? So thinking towards the future, obviously they have guys on the roster, but are there guys that they could be looking at, be it somebody who could contribute it right away at 31, or maybe somebody they could be looking at later?
Well, there's actually a very interesting player, and that's Kool-Aid McKinstry, who I was very disappointed to hear was not his actual first name, but that's neither here or there. He was mooted as a possible top 10 pick this time last year. He didn't quite have the season for Alabama that people were expecting him to have, and he sort of slid into late first round consideration. And we know that the 49ers met with him at the combine, so they've had their eye on him. He's not the most athletic, but then again, the 49ers have been able to get away with that because they focus on such a strong pass rush. So they're sort of just more looking at cover, like cover corners. They're not necessarily looking for the best athletes just as much as they're looking for the best technique. And he's going to slide. He's probably not going to be picked until very late on day one. And it sort of begs the question, I guess, you know, the 49ers, they have 10 picks. They don't need 10 picks. If he gets to 26 or 27, do the 49ers pull the trigger? Do they like him enough to do that? They also met with Ennis. I'm going to probably mispronounce this. Ennis Rackstraw Jr. from Missouri. He's on that first to second round bubble. You know, I've seen quite a few mock him to the 49ers late in the first round, and that's certainly possible. The end of the first round is very, I guess, unpredictable because usually teams don't have 32 first round grades on players that they look at. So at the end of the first round, it's usually a more who do we like better. And then there's Cooper DeJean from Iowa, who I probably also bungled that name, sorry. He's a bit more interesting because he's more of a pure nickelback. I don't necessarily think he's someone the 49ers would favor because they would probably prefer to put Lenore in the slot. But he is versatile, which we know the 49ers really value positional versatility, especially in their defensive backs and in their offensive weapons. So if he falls back enough, do they take a look at him? So there are a few interesting options late in that first round mix. You certainly can't rule any of those three out.
So I have a question, Jeremy, based off what you just said. So you mentioned that, you know, the Niners have 10 picks and they probably don't need all of them. Is there a player that you've been seeing mocked or you think is going to go like early 20s, mid 20s that if the Niners see, they should absolutely jump for? Because my interpretation of the offensive tackle specifically is that there's a couple of guys, I think Tyler Gunton in particular, who seems to really be locked into this mid 20s stage. And it's not so much a, you know, who do you like more case, but it like there's an actual tangible difference in the player quality from picking at 31 versus the mid 20s with the offensive linemen.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting player in the sense that he and Amarius Mims, they're both very athletic tackles, big guys as well. They got that nice speed to power ratio, but they're a bit raw and they're not necessarily going to get picked as high as they should be. Either one of those two, I think if they fall to that 23, 24 mark, or even 21, because Miami only have, I believe, five picks in this entire draft, so they could be looking to shift back a touch. I think because they met with a lot of first round tackles, the 49ers have keyed in on that as their number one need, at least as far as the meetings are concerned. So yeah, I think if either one of those two are in that early to mid 20s stage, they're definitely going to look to pull the trigger. I would be shocked if they didn't at least make some calls. If not the first round, definitely looking at the mid second, you know, some tackles there that could be on the list, like Patrick Paul from Houston, Kingsley Sua Matea from BYU. So, but no, Marius Mims or Tyler Guyton, you know, very big, very athletic, very strong tackles, a bit raw, but, you know, certainly someone I think that they'll be taking close looks at if they slide down the order.
And then I get a quick follow-up then. Just rattle these off. If you're John Lynch and you're sitting at 31, do you think it's smarter to, or with this draft, would you rather the Niners trade back from 31, get to the like, you know, top five picks of the second, and then use that extra capital they get to move up in the second and, you know, target two players, maybe an offensive tackle and a corner in the two early seconds? Or is this the type of draft where you should really be like honing in on someone in the top 20, 23 picks? Like, how do you think the Niners can best bolster the holes they have right now?
It's very interesting because one of the key storylines heading into this draft is Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. And if they move into the back half of the first round, if they go right to the end, there's probably going to be a team that wants that fifth-year option, and they might be willing to pay over to get it. So I think it's going to depend on what offer they get and if that comes in play. Because the interesting thing we found out this week from John Lynch is that this draft has been heavily, I don't want to say compromised, I guess affected is probably the better word for it. It's been very affected by the fact that a lot of players they deemed draftable have returned to school with the newer money as well as that extra COVID year that they received a few years back. So this year is not deemed as deep as next year's picks. So if they trade back, they're probably not going to want to trade back too far because Lynch said they have 22 first-round grades, and they're probably not going to find those there. So if a team says, we want Michael Penix or we want Bo Nix, we're willing to give you an early second-rounder just to lock up that fifth-year option, then, yeah, I think they will look at trading back because just because that tackle position is so deep. So, you know, they could get a Patrick Paul who could develop into a very good starter. They could get a Max Melton, the cornerback from Rutgers that I really love and I think is going to be a very strong pro player. Bit to play out, but yeah, depending how the draft falls, I think they could definitely look at trading back. If I were John Lynch, however, I would want to trade up for one of the tackles. I think I'm just in love with Amarius Mims, just that sheer potential. He's a bit raw, a bit boom or bust, but you know, you give him Trent Williams to learn from, a year or two learning behind him and shoring up right tackle in the meantime, I think that's just way too good to refuse.
All right. All good stuff. Those are good questions, actually. I was looking at you coming in with the fire. All right. So I'm going to pair a couple of things. I wrote down a couple of different questions related to this. So you recently released, I know you've done a couple different versions of like mock drafts where you'll do the entire first round for the whole league. And you had your last one released just recently, I believe, on our site, ninernose.com. So go check that out if you're listening to this. But just if you could talk a little bit about that mock, anything you really want to say about it, like what did you like about it? What were you like excited to do? Did you do anything that surprised you? And then ultimately, what did you ultimately come down with, like what you think the Niners are going to do based on where your draft falls? So it's kind of a free form chat about your mock draft. If you want to talk about how you put it together, whatever it is that you want to say about it, this is your opportunity.
Well, the first thing I'm going to point out in this mock draft, I talked a lot about trading up for Amarius Mims. He actually fell to 31 in this mock draft. And I promise I did not do that on purpose. I think there's a lot of considerations. And he could certainly go earlier than 31. I by no means think it's a definite. Because, as I mentioned before, there's not a lot behind the first tackle in Joe Alt in terms of order. Like, people have radically different orders. They all have their strengths and their weaknesses. But the other interesting thing that really came out this mock draft is just how many offensive players I ended up having come off this board, because the NFL record, and I'm ad-libbing here because I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, I believe the record for most offensive-based players in the first round ever is 20. I have 23.
Wow.
In this. And that should speak a lot to just how strong it is offensively and maybe even how weak it is in terms of defensive prospects. Now, I didn't do any trades with the exception of Minnesota trading with the Chargers. to get JJ McCarthy. But even then, that was very interesting because it created that knock-on effect with the quarterbacks. Because I had Bo Nix going at 12 to Denver, and I had Michael Penix Jr. going at 13 to the Raiders. So if that happens, if we get six quarterback picks in the first 13, all bets are off. Because that means a lot of people are going to slide down, and that, of course, benefits the 49ers. They're hardly going to be looking at a quarterback in the first round. And in turn, that what we're talking for about, you know, if a player falls, I'm just going to rattle off. These are all offensive linemen that went 20 or four later in this draft. Had Graham Barton go to Steelers at 20, Talia Fuaga go 21 to Miami, J.C. Latham go 24 to the Cowboys, Tyler Guyton go 25 to the Packers, Jackson Powers-Johnson 29 to the Lions, Jordan Morgan 30 to the Ravens, and then Amarius Mims 31 to the 49ers. So there's a lot. We talked about trading up if they find a lineman they really like. There's a lot to trade up for there. So if the draft falls that way, I would say that we would get a trade up.
So
that's the number one thing in that draft, in that mock draft.
Quick question off that I just had. Do you think, because I've seen Latham mocked like way higher in a lot of different places, so I'm wondering if Latham's falling to like 24, do you think that's a player the Niners might definitely, like, is he a step above Amarius Mims in your opinion, or Tyler Dutton, someone who's like worthy of that trade up for sure?
Well, J.C. Latham is, for me, his ceiling is not as high. He's probably stuck as a right tackle in the pros. And certainly the 49ers need a right tackle. So in terms of plug and play week one, definitely he's someone to consider. He's not going to replace Trent Williams. So I'm not 100% sure of the fit, because the 49ers are going to have a mind for the future, as well as just, you know, beefing it up for 2024. They're gonna want to prepare for life after, you know, Trent Williams retires, which hopefully will not be too soon, but, you know, we know he's mooted retirement in the past. So I think that's the number one knock on him, is that he's just a right tackle. So if he's just a right tackle, he's gonna get drafted in the top half of the first round in a very deep offensive line class. I'm never say never, because it's a very unpredictable offensive line in terms of, you know, just ranking, you know, power rankings. But I think he will slide. I think he's just he's a week one right tackle, and he'll be a right tackle for 10 to 12 years. That's pretty much what he'll be. I think the 49ers might just prefer looking at players, though, that will be able to make that leap to the blind side in the next two or three years.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. I think if they were in a different situation where they knew that their left tackle was going to be in place for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, that they'd probably feel a little bit more comfortable with a move like that. But I think if you're going to make a move with an offensive tackle specifically, I mean, even if you're assuming, I don't know, that Colton McKivitz ends up still maintaining the job for 2024, at least you got to have somebody who's going to be ready to play, you know, think like what happened with Aaron Banks, his rookie year and then into his second season. I'm a little concerned about that being the thought process, with really anybody that they're taking in the first round. I know it's been a long time since they've had a first round pick, and the last first round pick that they took ended up being a quarterback that also didn't play as a rookie. Cause as Akshay has already said, this is a very much a Super Bowl or bust situation heading into 2024 with their last season with a guaranteed low contract with their quarterback. And I'm definitely on the, like, let's make sure whoever they get at 31 is going to be somebody who can contribute like immediately, because it's a first round draft pick, man. You got to get something out of him as soon as possible, would be my thought. I don't know.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That's,
yeah, and I think that's the big problem there, isn't it? Is just that there's not a ton of players outside of that offensive line, you know, because obviously the 49ers probably need to upgrade Spencer Burford as well, so that whole right side probably needs an upgrade. And the 49ers could use a second corner so Deomino Lenore can move back into the slot. Other than that, there's not many positions where you're going to look at it and say, that's a week one starter.
Right.
So I think that's also the consideration for the 49ers when they're looking at who to draft. Because as you mentioned, it's, you know, the team is going to have to pay Purdy at the end of this next season. So this is the last year he's on his rookie contract. And it's the last year that they can really give him a stat squad behind him. So I guess in that sense, someone like J.C. Latham could make more sense in that he's a week one right tackle. Like, in terms of being a right tackle, he's probably the best in the league at that regard. But it just doesn't feel like building for the future is there, because, you know, left tackles get paid a lot. We understand that. That's what they're there for. We've all watched The Blind Side. We know what that's like. So you want that cheap left tackle. You want that Amarius Mims or Tyler Guyton or someone like that in the first round if you can, that fifth-year contract. So I guess that's the other consideration there as well.
Yep. Actually, I was going to say something there.
I have a treatise about this that I didn't publish because I was preoccupied, and I always give myself like a stern talking to about it, because every year I think about this and I never get an article out about it. But I think, Jeremy, like the way you're thinking about it, I think really matches the way the 49ers approach the draft, which is why I'd probably expect to see an Amarius Mims over a J.C. Latham. Because I think, you know, when we think about Lance and like basically anytime the 49ers have missed in the draft, I'd argue it's a byproduct of their like earlier round strategy being really like focused on upside and like special talent, special in quotes, that you can't necessarily coach. Like, you can't get someone to be this particular like kind of athlete, you know, like guys like Jalen Hurd, who was like couldn't get over the injury bug, Reuben Foster, who had off the field issues, Solomon Thomas, who's supposed to be like an athletic tweener, and then, you know, Trey Lance, who's this toolsy raw quarterback. Like, there's a lot of these, Javon Kinlaw, like a bunch of like jumps for upside. Then you get to the later rounds and they're looking for upside, obviously. But I think there's a lot more of like, here's a like, I clearly identified skill that we know this guy has that makes him useful on Sundays. And you get a lot of good players that way. So I'm wondering, you don't have to agree with me on like how I think the 49ers approach the draft, but do you think there's this like desire from the Niners, or like in general, to attack the first round as this place to get really high upside players, you know, players who might be a little more raw, but you definitely think that they'll make a difference for years to come if everything works out?
Yeah, I think that's certainly what the 49ers are looking for, and not just in the first round, but also players in on day two and even on day three. They take some pretty big swings. I think we all remember players like Marshon Lattimore, who never got over his tearing his knee, but he was such a high profile running back and they just wanted to take that risk. I think there's a lot of risk versus reward, and I think they put a lot of trust in that coaching staff to just mitigate that, because, you know, it's a very good coaching staff, especially on offense, but even the defense, just despite how many defensive coordinators have gone on to be head coaches over the years, I sort of look at it as though they go for ceiling over floor, essentially. They will go for the guy, not necessarily who's going to be the best week one, but who's going to be the best guy 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the line with all that coaching coming in. So, no, I agree. I definitely think they go for ceiling over floor. So that's why someone like a Marius Mims makes so much more sense than a JC Latham in my eyes, just basically how they tended to treat the draft in that regard.
Do you like Amarius Mims? Let's talk about him since that's the direction that you went. So talk a little bit about him in more detail, I guess, if you can, about what is it specifically that is attractive to him about to you as a player? Why do you think he's a good fit for the 49ers, both for the short and hopefully the long term?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is just what a monster he is physically. We're talking about a 6'8", 340-pound tackle that can run a 40 time of just over 5 seconds. It was like 5.06, 5.07. He is ridiculously talented. There's just been that little bit of concern. You know, he's been injured while he was at Georgia. He only had, I think, the 9 collegiate starts. So there's that question of, can he put it together? You know, very boom or bust in that regard. But in terms of, and, you know, we mentioned this, you know, the 49ers like to look at ceiling. I genuinely think he's the highest ceiling of any of the tackles in this draft. His ceiling is literally the best, I would say the best tackle in the league, just based on the physical attributes. You know, he's very powerful, he's strong. He does sometimes get caught trying to rely on that too much. He does need a bit of coaching up in that regard, especially when it comes to run blocking. But boy, if you watch him in action, you watch him lock in on a defender, it's hard not to love a player like that. It's hard to get excited about offensive linemen in general. We know they're not the sexiest picks in the draft, but he's one of those exceptions you just look at and you just go, that can't be legal. Whatever he's doing, that cannot be legal. And, you know, that's the sort of ceiling that you get excited for. We know that Trent Williams is not long for the league. He'll be 1 year and done, 2 years and done, depending on how they feel about where he's at and whether or not he wants to keep playing. But when you look at the combination of him being possible to draft, because I could easily say someone like Marvin Harrison Jr. and we know he's not going to be there, but in terms of a possibility to take in the draft and just that sheer potential, he's just been my favorite.
Yeah, I think that all matched up pretty well. I guess we'll find out. Let's see what else. So we've talked about the first round, and obviously that's the major focus, but there are 6 more rounds in this draft. So I wanted to just get your feelings on anybody that's like a later round guy, could be, you know, day 2 guy, day 3 guy, that you're like, this is a guy that I'm excited about, that if he were a 49ers draft pick, I would just be over the moon. And why is it Luke McCaffrey? I'm just kidding.
It could be Luke McCaffrey.
It's Frank Gore Jr., but no, I'm just kidding. It's whatever Terrell Owens' kid's name is. Who am I missing?
Tariq or something.
Jerry Rice's kid. Brendan Rice is his name. So, and that will complete the quartet of nepotism. but anyway, we could talk about those 4 guys and if you want to, but let's start with the other question first. Like a day 2, day 3 guy that you're excited about, and you're like, if this is my guy right here, I want him to be in red and gold next year.
I mentioned him before, but I am a huge fan of Max Melton, the cornerback from Rutgers. He's been You know, he'd been buried on a terrible Scarlet Knights team. I think he would be a first-round pick if he was at a better school. I think he just didn't quite get the attention that other players got. But when I look at what he does on the field, he is so fast. He's so good at covering those speedy receivers. He's versatile. He can play boundary corner. He can play in the slot if they need. And, you know, we know that the 49ers so often do. They have to find ways to plug gaps because injury always seems to inevitably happen at the worst possible time. But no, he's been on my radar for most of the year. He was at day two, day three bubble, although I always thought he would be probably closer to that day, that late day two mark. But now, unfortunately, the rest of the league has caught up, and now he's firmly in that second round consideration. And if the 49ers do trade up, that's who I want to see them trade up for. Just Max Melton. Just get that speedy corner on the outside, move Diomedore Lenore into the slot, because we know that's where he likes to play. That's his best position. That's who I would get excited at. If they say Max Melton, I will just, you know, I'm just like dusting my hands, pack it up, I'm happy. I don't care what we do with the other picks, I'm good.
All right, I like it. Cool. Well, since we stumbled into the conversation, if of those four legacy guys, I mean, I don't think that Terrell Owens' son is actually a draft guy. I think he's probably an undrafted free agent, more than likely, which leaves, you know, Frank Gore Jr., Brendan Rice, and Luke McCaffrey. Which do you think is the likeliest direction that the 49ers could go if they wanted to, like, you know, appease the fans, but also get a guy who's going to potentially make an impact on this team?
Funnily enough, I actually do think it is Luke McCaffrey that might be the most likely. I think Brendan Rice, he's probably day two now. I don't think he's going to slide to the end of the third round, and I don't think he's going to be taken by the 49ers in the second round, or they'll trade up to draft a receiver like him, unfortunately. I think you mentioned Tariq Owens. He's not really... He's probably on that bubble. I think he has taken a bit of a boost to his draft stock because he had a really good pro day in front of scouts. I do think he's on that, probably that UDFA list, though. I think same with Frank Gore Jr. He might be a very late third day pick, but no, Luke McCaffrey, he's sort of in that day three area, and he's certainly got some, you know, he's got that McCaffrey athleticism to him. And I think, you know, we've talked about Trent Taylor being on the team, but I don't think they're necessarily going to be married to the idea that he has to be the kick returner. So I could definitely see a scenario where McCaffrey gets taken in the fourth or the fifth round, and he just contributes right away on special teams. I think he's probably the most likely of the four nepotism babies, shall we call them? the nepotism babies.
Which is ironic because his nepotism is very short relative to, you know,
to the others, yeah.
Jerry Rice's son. I mean, frankly, if I were Jerry Rice's son, I don't think I'd want to play for the 49ers. Like, could you imagine just like the absolute pressure of that? Just
the real question is, do you think his dad would let him wear the 80 or?
No.
No, not at all. No,
100% no. I don't think so at all. I think Jerry would be like, no, you'd probably make him wear like a, I don't know.
Jerry, I have a question about my like draft crush. I'm a lot like Al Davis insofar as I love speed. So based off like what you've seen of Xavier Worthy, do you think like, is this going to be a John Ross situation, or do you think he'll make it as an NFL receiver? And how could he fit with the 49ers, if possible?
Well, he's a much better route runner than John Ross. I mean, John Ross could run very fast. He just could not get going in terms of his route running. I think a lot of people sort of look at him and they see the speed and they just think, oh, he's just really fast. He's just going to be you know, the guy that everyone looks at as a shining new toy, and then 6 weeks on, you get buyer's remorse thinking, oh, God, I actually used to like that. But, no, I think he's a much better route runner than people give him credit for. I think he's certainly above someone like a John Ross. I think it depends where he goes to, though. If he goes somewhere like Buffalo, that would probably be a bit better for him, because Josh Allen is a much more strong-armed quarterback than Brock Purdy. But that the yards after catch potential, though, if it just makes a ton of sense for the 49ers if they did move on from Brandon Ayuk to just take that leap, if they could just go, well, we need a guy that can leave people in the dust. So I actually think he's going to be a very good receiver. I'm actually all in on Xavier Worthy. I think he is going to prove the naysayers wrong. I just don't know where it's going to be. He's still on that bubble. I think Buffalo, don't rule out the 49ers if Ayuk does lead the team, because they certainly did meet with him at the combine. And then you got Kansas City, who
I was going to say, don't say that.
we have to say it. We have to say it.
No, it's not allowed. They don't need any more offense. They're fine. They're good.
They don't need any more defense either.
They don't need nothing. They're fine. They're holding out from the draft. Sorry, Kansas City. You win. There's a new rule. You win 2 Super Bowls in a row, you're not allowed to draft for 5 years. Deal with that. sorry. I'm wondering, and I think wide receiver is going to be a direction they're going to go. I mean, obviously, we mentioned Luke McCaffrey. I don't think he would be like a game changer in terms of like, this is going to completely realign your entire franchise. But I don't know that wide receiver is out of the question, even in that with that first round pick, depending on how things fall, even if Brandon Ayuk is still in the picture, because you have to think like Juwan Jennings will hopefully at some point sign his restricted free agent tender. But that doesn't guarantee anything past this year. There's a lot of conversation about this, about Deebo Samuel being a camp casualty in the same way that Eric Armstead was this year, next year, because he's going to get towards that point in the deal where all of these contracts come to, where it's going to start to get easier to get out of and that sort of thing. So, and beyond that, I mean, even on the current roster after Ayuk, Deebo and Juwan Jennings, the cupboard is bare. So related to that conversation we were having before about, you know, drafting for now and drafting for the future, I mean, it doesn't seem completely crazy to me that if there's a potential game-changing wide receiver there at 31, especially somebody they could steal from Kansas City by taking him, it seems to me like that could potentially be in play for sure.
Yeah, well, we look at the combine meeting list, which I just so very conveniently have in front of me right now. We know that they've met with 4 receivers that either will or could be first round picks. You got Xavier Worthy, you have Ladd McConkey from Georgia. He's probably the best route runner, which we know they really value in San Francisco. You got Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, and you've also, I apparently just miscounted because there's only 3 of them. So there's 3 receivers. Sorry, not 4.
It's all right. Counting is hard. It's fine.
Yeah, it's hard to count. No, but there is 4. Sorry, Brian Thomas Jr. Gone past his name. So we know there's 4 receivers that they've looked at in terms of either going to be first rounders or on that first or second round bubble. So it's not out of play. I love Juwan Jennings, and he's certainly someone that gets the really important catches when you need them. And so I would be really upset if he did end up leaving the team. But there's also no doubt the team is at least looking at the idea of an upgrade. And if all the tackles they like are off the board, if there's like not another player they like, It could definitely be a receiver. It's not out of the question. I would be not betting on it, so to speak, but, you know, don't rule it out. They're meeting with these first-round receivers for a reason. Right. Maybe it's just to prepare just in case Ayuk leaves, but no, they could definitely be looking for an upgrade as well. So no, definitely don't rule it out.
I like it. I'm in favor. Anything to help our good friend Brock Purdy out. Congratulations to Brock Purdy, by the way. I don't think we said that last time. I don't think he got married in between this podcast and the last one. So
also got a John Deere commercial.
Yeah, and Toyota. He's all over the place. Brock Purdy. He's not hurting for money, is what we're trying to say. in spite of his low
just contract. Remember that for the contract negotiations.
Yeah, somehow I don't think that's gonna factor in, but there we go. we'll see how that goes. We'll table that conversation for a year or so. Aksha, any other questions that you have for Jeremy? I have one more that I want to pose to both of you. It's a pretty simple question before we close up, but do you have any other like pressing things that you're like, this is a question I need to ask right now?
No, I feel like I fired off all my questions pretty early. Oh, I do have a question.
Oh, there we go.
So, Jeremy, you had 6 quarterbacks going in the top 13 of your latest mock. My question to you is, how many of those quarterbacks do you think are legitimate, like, first-round prospects? Like, if you were a team drafting in the top 10, where at what point are you like, I'm not taking this guy at this point?
Well, I think the three definites, we know that Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May, they're the three everyone likes. I think teams like JJ McCarthy more than fans might. So I guess if I was a team, I'd probably like JJ McCarthy more than I did. I don't think Bo Nix and Michael Penix are first rounders in my eyes. I just have too many question marks with them in terms of consistency and upside. But we know the position gets overdrafted. We understand that's what happens. I would probably just have the 4, if I'm being honest. It would just be Williams, Daniels, May, and McCarthy in terms of who goes in the first round. If I'm a team in the top 10, I need a quarterback, and those two are my options. I'm probably just looking for someone like, I guess, Spencer Rattler in the third, on day 2, probably the 3rd round somewhere in that area, because I feel like there's more upside with him as opposed to Nix. I think Penix has pretty good upside, but his floor is a lot lower. So this is obviously what the mock draft is what I think will happen more than what I think should happen. And that's the reality, is that they just get overdrafted. So I think it'll be 6, but I think there should be 4.
Very interesting, for sure.
Apologies to the Pac-12 fans out there.
What's the Pac-12?
Is that exactly.
I'm not familiar with that organization. Anywho, so all right, so let's get into the last question, and we'll pose this to all three of us. I'm going to ask the question, but I'm also going to answer it. So Jeremy, you alluded to this earlier in the episode. You mentioned the Niners have 10 draft picks. We used to have 11, but there was a stupid thing that happened and they took one of them away, which was really mean. Now we have 10. So I'm going to set the over under. So we know how this works, right? Akshaz does, because he's a big betting guy. very familiar with the over-under.
I'm familiar with the over-under.
Yeah. I'm going to set the over-under at 7.5 players selected. Are we going over or under 7.5 players selected?
Ooh. I have to think. That's right on the line, because I was thinking 7. Because I was thinking 7 when I was doing this in my head. I'll say just over. I think 7's probably a good number, because you still have to fill in that depth. I think, you know, certainly it could be 6, but I think 7 will probably be the number. So I'll take the over.
Wait, so I said 7.5. So that would be the under.
Oh, you said 7.5. Sorry. I think that's even worse, but I'll say seven. I think okay. I think the 49ers, they do like to trade up a bit, especially on day three. They kind of like to just grab their guys. So I think seven is, I think seven's that number. I'll go seven. Right. So I'll take the
Access, what do you think?
I'm feeling under for sure, and I'm going to go a little more aggressive. I don't see more than, like, five players out of this class. I mean, I think John Lynch's comments about the weakness of the later rounds was pretty striking to me, because I wouldn't have expected him to say something like that. But I think on top of that, that also means that you're going to get a lot of super seniors and, you know, players who are back for their senior year with NIL coming out next year, which means that next year might be the time you want to load up on those picks. I definitely think they're trading up in the first round. I can see them trading up basically at every juncture. I think there's going to be a lot of, like, filling small holes as much as you can to load this team up. And at this point, with the way their offseason went, and it was a lot of adding players to compete for positions, mm-hmm. I don't know if I would see, like, more than five rookies making the roster to begin with.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to put it at five and give myself two extra players of leeway. The under.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with the under. I'm not sure what the number is. I think it is going to be a little lower than we think. I did a 53 man roster projection right after the first wave of free agency. And you can build a pretty good 53-man roster based solely on the players that were on the team at that juncture, like pre-draft. And obviously there will be some guys that'll get bumped, and there will be some upgrades that will be made. But I think you're right. And I mean, this has been the case for the last couple of years, right? This team has been so good, and the roster has been in such good shape that there's just not a lot of places to put rookies, and you'd rather trade up and get a guy that you really want, you really feel confident is going to make the team, or trade out of a spot and get a pick for, you know, later in the draft or for next year or whatever, when you feel like there might be more holes to fill or something like that. Because what you don't want to do is like, okay, I have 10 draft picks, two in the third round, and I'm going to take two third round draft picks, and neither of them are going to make the team. And then what do you do? So you don't want to be in that position at all. So I'm right there with you. I think five to six probably sounds pretty good to me, but certainly less than seven and a half for sure. I think that seems about right. So, all right. Jeremy, any final things you want to say about the draft? Anything that we didn't get to that you were like, I definitely want to mention this before we wrap this up.
I'll put you on the spot now. I'll go here. We mentioned draft crushes. I know you're not a draft guy, and I know you're not in depth with a lot of this stuff, but do you have a draft crush you want to see in a red jersey.
Goodness. That is a very good question. I honestly don't know.
I'll make it easier for you. Okay. You can pick someone the 49ers have no realistic shot at, if that makes it easier.
Well, bring me Marvin Harrison Jr. then. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, that is my ideal world. I'm like, I think I said somewhere, like, if Ayuk is gone, like, send him to New England for number three, and we can leapfrog the Cardinals and get Marvin Harrison Jr. into the good half of the NFC West. I think there is the name that stands out to me, and I think you mentioned him already, was Xavier Leggett, I believe is his name, out of South Carolina. I think the reason that stands out to me is because I've seen him described as a very Debo Samuel-like player. The comparison obviously runs pretty deep. He goes to South Carolina. I think they are pretty familiar with each other, that sort of thing. And so if the plan is, and I don't love this plan, because I'm a big Debo Samuel guy. I like having him on the team. I think he's a valuable part of the offense. But if the plan is that he's going to be the guy that gets the cut next year, I could certainly see the 49ers thinking ahead and being like, well, let's bring in somebody who can maybe do some of those things. So that would be kind of interesting to see if that would work and whether or not that would cause too much of a stir. I think he's a really interesting player, and adding to this offense with talent that's going to be cheap for the next 4 years, especially if you're planning on paying your quarterback $40+ million starting next year, then is really high on my list of things to do.
I'm gonna follow this up because I've heard a couple interesting things about the. I'll pose this question to both of you because there's been an interesting update on the Cardinals that there could be a deal in place, at least in principle, between them and the Vikings. So I'm going to put this question to both of you. If the first four picks end up being quarterbacks and Marvin Harrison is available at 5 and the Chargers pull and say, we'll offer you pick 5 for pick 31 and Brandon Ayuk, would you take it? Would you trade the sure thing for Marvin Harrison Jr.?
I wouldn't do and 31 unless they threw their second in too. Because at that point, then you've like lost the opportunity to grab another guy. But like if they called and said, we'll give you essentially Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers for Ayuk, I think you have to like.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to
I don't think the Chargers would do a straight swap.
No.
I'm not even sure they would honestly do 31 and Ayuk for 5, but I'm just going in the realm of the possibility there. Would you trade Ayuk in 31 for Marvin Harrison Jr. or I guess even Nabers if that's who you prefer? I have Harrison Jr. ahead, but Nabers certainly has his fans as the top receiver, so I can understand if someone went that route.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said at the outset, like unless they get an opportunity to draft somebody who can immediately make an impact, and if you're drafting a wide receiver in the top 5, you surely hope that he's going to, then there's no reason to trade Brandon Ayuk whatsoever. But if that kind of deal is on the table, and like Oxshot says, I think you're gonna want a little bit more. If it were, I mean, it's not obviously the pick swap wouldn't work. That's not enough. Like a player and pick swaps is not sufficient in this particular case. You're going to need another pick, even if it's another, you know, that second rounder, which would be can get you back into the first round if you're interested in doing that, like based on where the Chargers will be. So that would be interesting to me. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Jimmy Harbaugh is going to be doing us any favors in that regard, but that would be interesting.
That's it. I'm done teasing you now. That's all good.
I like it. It's good stuff. All right. Well, Jeremy, thanks again for joining us and for bringing your thoughts and your just genuine knowledge of this particular area where we fall short. The draft, as I mentioned, begins Thursday night, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. That's round number 1. Round numbers 2 and 3 are on Friday, April 26th, starting at 7 p.m. Rounds 4 through 7 are Saturday, April 27th, starting at noon. Niner Noise will be with you throughout the entire thing. As I said, join us. Come find us on ninernoise.com. For round number 1, we'll be getting together starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time and going through the first round and having a good old time and talking about picks and all this kind of things. So probably get to hear Jeremy say more smart things about the draft and the rest of us go, yeah, okay, cool, that sounds good. That's what I'm planning on doing, everyone. So be ready for that kind of hard-hitting analysis, which is what you're here for. as always, we thank you for listening to this very special episode of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please continue to check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis, and be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And of course, share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.
This is the story of the one.
As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.